Hello and welcome to Hysteria. I'm Erin Ryan.
And I'm Alyssa Mastromonaco.
President Biden is on his way to an important international summit in Brussels where a lot will be discussed. Apparently, they're considering kicking Russia out of the G20. They were already kicked out of the G8, which is why it's the G7, and several other international organizations. And the longer Russia fucks around in Ukraine, the more things are going to kick them out, basically. So my question for you is this. Did Vladimir Putin invade Ukraine because he wanted to attend fewer meetings?
I mean, I feel like he wasn't so welcome at them to begin with. So maybe he's just like, yo, this is what they're going to do. I know this is what they're going to do. And he can just like sit alone at that big table all day long now.
No, he doesn't seem like he'd be very fun at parties or meetings.
No.
But I was just thinking, you know, if he was like, you know what, I want to attend fewer meetings, it would have been like the new, could this meeting have been an email, is could this email have been a European ground war? Which for Vladimir Putin, yes, it could have been.
It could have been. Could have been.
Yeah. Anyway, fuck that guy.
I was just going to say, can we say fuck that? Fuck that guy.
Fuck that guy.
Like, seriously. I mean, he's like a fucking horrible
fucking
human
monster.
Being. Like, he is a
criminal.
Monster. Like, we're not making fun of him. He's a fucking terrible person.
No. I eagerly await the day that he has a grave so that I may dance upon it.
Yes. Agree.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. And yeah.
Maybe it's a pilgrimage we could do together.
Oh, that'd be so fun. Hysteria field trip. This week, we are joined by Rebecca Coakley, Tian Tran, and Kara Klenk to tackle the following questions. Why are the Senate's worst people hijacking Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson's confirmation hearings? What is the ADA, and why do we need it now more than ever? What can be done about partner abuse that happens not only in plain sight, but in front of millions of social media users? And what stomach-churning horror trope is suddenly everywhere, and why? All this and more right now. A lot of news going on this week. I have some personal news.
What's their personal news?
My personal news is, well, you know it, and the listeners don't because this is an audio medium, but my personal news is I'm wearing a t-shirt today that says, you look so scared for a second.
I was like, what?
What? No, my personal news is I'm wearing a t-shirt that says, divorce your Republican husband. And
it's awesome.
It's cool. I bought it off Etsy because I saw a woman wearing one on TikTok and I was like, is this purchasable? And it turns out it is. But here's something about this shirt. It's a really good way to get dirty looks from men. If you go out.
Who doesn't want that?
I mean, I already get them, so whatever. But, you know, I got a couple dirty looks and one guy made a comment about it when I was just like picking up coffee this morning. And my thought was like, look, dude, if your wife is a novelty t-shirt away from divorcing you, like that's not my fault.
No.
You pushed her to the place where all, she was going to see a different novelty t-shirt, perhaps a bumper sticker that would have pushed her over the edge. So
either way,
don't blame me.
Not your fault.
Not my personal, the man's fault, probably.
Definitely.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about the Ketanji Brown Jackson SCOTUS hearings. Mm. What are your takeaways from the first couple days? I know that when listeners hear this, it'll be, we'll be past day three. But what are your impressions so far?
That we don't need to do these anymore. Like,
what do you mean?
I wouldn't say these are a productive use of anybody's time. I mean, when you get a bunch of fucking Republican, and look, let me just be clear. We've watched all the SCOTUS hearings. I would say that some Democrats didn't really perform great during the Brett Kavanaugh or Amy Comey Barrett hearings. Like, people just get super trite, and it sort of, it makes everything seem trite, I think, at that point.
Right.
But I mean, look. I'm not a Republican. I'm a Democrat. So let me tell you why these suck and are stupid. And it's because everyone is auditioning for QAnon. I think all the Republicans are auditioning for QAnon's endorsement in 2024. Yeah. So it's not even that this is trite. It's stupid. I mean, Josh Hawley going so deep. Also, here's the thing. I want questions that candidates, nominees can actually answer. The questions that Josh Hawley's staff went down the rabbit hole of the internet on, she simply couldn't have answered. Nobody's memory is that good. And then, I mean, Ted Cruz, anti-racist babies. That was one for the books. And then Marsha, Nobel laureate, Blackburn. That woman is so dumb. Her questions were so stupid. And let's be honest, no amount of, Judge Jackson, you are so incredible. You are so smart and articulate. God, someone tell them to stop using that word. And you're so accomplished. Dot, dot, dot. Now let me insert the dumbest question that has no bearing on this hearing or life in general while we're here. And so that is my takeaway. Though my favorite moment, I think, does involve Marsha, because she asked Judge Jackson to define what a woman was. And Judge Jackson just said, I'm not a biologist.
Yeah. I think Judge Jackson's face was just like a masterclass in dealing with exhausting people.
Yeah. Or like Xanax.
Yeah, right. She was just sitting there just like listening, obviously, and sort of like, are you done? Like, when are you going to—
Where's
when
the are you question? Be done?
Yeah. And she was like rising above all the bullshittery. But Alyssa, I completely agree with you that the grandstanding at these things has gotten completely out of hand. Lindsey Graham stomping, flouncing out of there. Like, come on, dude. You voted for her confirmation to the DC circuit like not long ago. Like, this is so exhausting and performative and silly. And yeah, they're all trying to get on Fox News and they're all trying to— I feel like they should have 10 seconds to ask a question. 10 seconds.
The 30 minutes is fucking terrible. Like, nothing good comes of it, because also no one yields back their time. Everyone uses their full 30 minutes, and it's literally to hear themselves talk.
Right. And but that's the thing. I think that they should change the rules so they have to be questions, and they have a limit of 20 seconds to ask the question. And if it is not a question ruled by the parliamentarian, they lose the rest of their time.
Right. And, you know, back in the day, this was only on C-SPAN. Now, do I think that we should be watching this? I do. But I think that a lot of these lawmakers are like, I'm going to be on CNN, Fox, and MSNBC all day. Let's make it good. You know?
Yeah. So I want to talk about something that really did make me feel good, though, which is the judge herself. She's a great speaker. She is so obviously the most intelligent person in the room. She's so qualified. And, you know, she's so qualified that Republicans are resorting to, like, the wildest, most ridiculous histrionics trying to make the case to derail her. And there's really nothing to derail. Like, she's so— this is what she was born to do. Like, she was born to do this. And I think she's going to make such a great Supreme Court justice. And there's no indication that any Democrats are wavering on supporting her. And Lisa Murkowski still has a good head on her shoulders. So I wouldn't be surprised if she supported her. But yeah, it's just sort of like the histrionics are just tedious.
Exhausting.
Exhausting. I wanted to single out a moment. I'm sure that Strict Scrutiny, podcast on the Crooked Network— if you guys don't listen, you should listen. It's great. I'm sure they're going to be getting into this more deeply. But I wanted to single out kind of a like more superficial moment. And that was at the beginning during Judge Jackson's opening statement, when she singled out her husband, Dr. Patrick Jackson, as somebody that was just a great husband and father and, you know, support for her. And we had talked about Patrick Jackson on the show before, as like, he's a surgeon, and he used to get off of like 24-hour shifts at the hospital so that he could watch his wife work.
Yes.
Like, he was such a big fan of her. And one time somebody asked if they should get the homeless man out of the courtroom because he was so disheveled from this long shift. But he's like such a huge fan of his wife. He was wiping tears away, watching her give her opening statement. He was so proud of her. Like, the pride that that man has for his incredible wife was just like, made me like tear up a little bit. And I just was thinking, you know, in a world of Dr. Patrick Jackson's and Marty Ginsburg's, there is no reason to settle for a Mel Gibson. You know, there is no reason to settle for a Ted Cruz. We live in a world where there are Patrick Jackson's and Marty Ginsburg's. And so just remember that.
Yes. Aaron, such a good flag.
Don't settle for a Ted Cruz when there's a Dr. Patrick Jackson out there. And if you don't find your Dr. Patrick Jackson, that's fine. Better with yourself.
100% cosign.
Yeah. So, yeah, so the hearings are ongoing. Nothing happened to change anybody's mind. You know, senators got to hear themselves. I also wanted to single out Senator Hirono, Mazie Hirono from Hawaii.
Yes!
Who had a great moment. One of the Republican spaghetti at the wall tactics was to paint Judge Jackson as somehow soft on child pornography. And Senator Hirono used her time to elucidate how judges that Republicans confirmed basically treated child pornographers the exact same way. That it is pretty, there are a lot of factors that go in, like Judge Jackson said, to laying out sentences. And it's very much an oversimplification to present her sentencing as like just her using her discretion.
Yes.
And like Republican appointed judges do the exact goddamn same thing. And so, yeah, I mean, but, you know, these people have no shame. So, of course, they're going to keep harping on this. Let's see. Do we have any other news today we want to talk about?
I mean,
anything else?
I feel like we let Judge Jackson stand on her own.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't wait to see her on the court.
Can't wait.
I think she's going to be a great addition to the court. First Black woman in American history mm-hmm. on the Supreme Court, and really, really excited to see that. So yes. Let's take a quick break. But when we come back, we have an interview that I'm really, really stoked about.
Very excited.
And welcome back. Joining us today is Rebecca Coakley. Rebecca is a disability rights activist and is currently the first U.S. Disability Rights Program Officer for the Ford Foundation. The program seeks to build a pipeline of diverse leadership, promote disability pride, and mobilize resources for disability rights work. Before that, Rebecca was the co-founder and director of the Disability Justice Initiative at the Center for American Progress, where she built out a progressive policy platform that protected the rights and services of people with disabilities and what they depend on for survival. She is a mom and a self-described nerd and policy wonk. You will fit right in here. Welcome, Rebecca.
Thank you so much for having me.
We've wanted you on the show for quite some time, and I'm really, really glad that it's worked out.
The fangirling is mutual.
Oh, well, thank you so much. Well, can you start by telling our listeners a little bit about yourself? Like, what's the path that led you to the work that you're currently doing?
Definitely. So I had the fortune of growing up in a household with two parents with the same disability that I have, which is achondroplasia, or the most common form of dwarfism. And both of my parents were activists, which was not either of their real intention. My dad grew up the son of an ultra-conservative, super racist federal judge in Selma, Alabama. Hmm. And my mom was one of nine redheaded hippie flower children outside of San Francisco. And they met in the 70s at a Little People convention. And my dad went back to Selma and threw everything he owned in the back of his 69 Camaro and drove cross country, and they eloped.
And both of them,
I mean, my parents were very open about my dad's family history. Like, we talked about the Reverend Reeb trial, which my grandfather oversaw. We talked about the fact that my grandfather was responsible for the injunction, or what they call the John Lewis injunction, which was the ruling that said three or more African Americans that congregated talking about voting in Alabama could constitute a mob. And they were like, that is not the path that we're going down. And I think also being in the Bay Area at the late 70s, early 80s, at the height of the AIDS epidemic, both of them worked in the disability policy space. And those were disabled folks that they were seeing being impacted. And my parents were very much like, we have to show up for other communities. That's our responsibility. And so I grew up like a politics junkie, watching election night returns, working for Congressman Lantos, who was my local legislator, literally meeting then State Senator Barack Obama on the rooftop of 101 Constitution Avenue at a $15 person fundraiser hosted by Ted Kennedy. Like, my path was set sort of from that point on.
Wow, that's really cool. Also, I want to watch the movie about your parents.
Yeah, like, definitely.
That's,
you know, one of these days, definitely.
That's like, that could save the rom-com as a genre, I think. So, Rebecca, according to the CDC, currently in the U.S., there are 61 million adults living with a disability, and globally, that's about a billion adults. And yet, the Americans with Disabilities Act was only signed officially into law in 1990. What did people with disabilities do before that? And can you talk to us a little bit about what the ADA means to people with disabilities?
That 61 million number is important because it's important to remember that that's pre-COVID. Mm-hmm. COVID is going to result in the largest disability population boom since AIDS and HIV in the 80s and since sort of the post-Vietnam era. So we are talking like a massive, at least a million plus more disabled people in the US alone because of long COVID. So prior to the ADA, disabled people didn't go places. You didn't have a right to public accommodations. There was no right to captioning on television. Somebody could literally say to you, as I've had said to me, even post the ADA, we'd really like to hire you, but an organization like ours is not ambitious enough to hire someone like you. And that would be okay. My mom was denied tenure for only being able to reach the bottom 6 inches of a chalkboard. You know, back in the pre-ADA days, even though you could use like overhead projectors, like even just the bad 70s and 80s tech existed. But the college she worked at for years was able to say, we're going to deny you tenure because our field of vision for what you're capable of is limited to the bottom 6 inches of a chalkboard.
Oh boy.
And, you know, when you think about who we're talking about, it's a massive group. The thing I think is so beautiful about the ADA is how broad the definition is. Mm-hmm. It's any mental or physical impairment which impacts the activities of daily living for someone. So they could really vary from any of us. Like what's a daily activity for me could be different than it is for you. Mm-hmm. A record or a history of such impairment. So that protects people who are cancer survivors, veterans, et cetera, who may not be currently experiencing disability, but they went through an experience that actually disabled them, or regarded as. So people with like facial disfigurements and whatnot. So this definition is broad enough to include kids in Flint, Michigan that are like 2,800 days plus out without clean drinking water and have acquired learning disabilities because of it. It's broad enough to include women experiencing postpartum depression, people that live with gastrointestinal issues like IBS or IBD, and it's broad enough to include folks with long COVID. Mm-hmm. It really was like the original big tent policy. And when you think about what that means as a coalition and also as a political base, that's massive. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's crazy that it was a George H.W. Bush initiative, right?
It's not.
Okay.
Because President Bush had lost a child to leukemia when she was 3. He had his son, George W. Bush, as somebody living with who's in recovery because of a substance abuse disorder, recovery counts as a disability. So we had a son with a disability. You also had Attorney General Dick Thornburg, who had a son with an intellectual disability, who for a period of time, he was a single dad raising his 3 boys. And you had folks like Boyd and Gray also in the White House who had a personal connection to disability. So even at that time, there was an awareness. And I would actually argue that that was the last time we actually saw strong bipartisan support for civil rights legislation was the ADA. And it was also, frankly, and I will argue with my elders about this till the cows come home, the last time that disability was a bipartisan issue.
Wow. Rebecca, you mentioned long COVID. In what ways has the pandemic affected people with disabilities? And we've seen COVID characterized as a mass disabling event. Are we prepared for long COVID?
We are completely unprepared for long COVID. And we have a history of being unprepared for post-viral illnesses in general. The symptoms in long COVID have existed way prior to COVID-19. They existed through illnesses like myalgic encephalomyelitis, or what we used to call chronic fatigue syndrome. You know, fibromyalgia, a lot of these illnesses that frankly, predominantly hysteria is a great example. Illnesses that were predominantly targeted around women and communities of color, that people were told, you're making it up. It's all in your head. You're a fraud. And many of those symptoms, exhaustion, issues around loss of sense of smell, sense of taste, brain fog. All of these things are really exhibited in what we're seeing in long COVID today. Now, I also think that it's really interesting because in many ways, COVID made things harder for parts of the disability community. COVID also made things easier for other parts of the community. So for example, people, you know, we have as a community asked for telework for over 30 years. And we were told that is not a reasonable accommodation. And then COVID hits. And it's so cute. The non-disabled population, Columbus telework. They like planted a flag and we're like, we have discovered this thing called telework. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing. You can work from home at your pace with the right supports and technology. And so we actually saw an increase in disability employment in a really interesting way because people were able to do their jobs from home with the supports that they needed because everybody was doing it. You had students with certain types of disabilities in school and on college, you know, both in K through 12 and in post-secondary, who had been denied accommodations that all of a sudden could access the learning, their learning needs better. You know, and that wasn't necessarily true for everybody, but for a certain part of the population, there was an actual gain made. And now what we're seeing happen as we start rolling back all these protections and all these enhancements that we made to our society is those people are now having the floor pulled out from under them and being told, oh, all of a sudden we can't do remote learning. I'm sorry, you can't work from home, even though you've proven that you can do the job successfully for almost 2.5 years now. And so it continues to be a significant issue for the community. And on the flip side, it's meant that people with autoimmune disabilities can't go outside. I was talking to somebody recently and they were saying to me about, we were talking about our grantees and they were like, oh, isn't it so great that your grantees can get back to work now? And I said, whose grantees? And they're like, well, all of our grantees. And my response was, my grantees haven't left the house in 2.5 years. My grantees are still bearing staff. And so the reality for the disability community in this moment has been just a reminder of the short memory of American society to be like, all right, that sucked. Let's move on to the next thing. Mm-hmm. And it's like, but we're still struggling. We're still being left behind in this moment.
Mm-hmm. So let's get a little bit wonky here, Rebecca, because you mentioned reasonable accommodations for people with disabilities. And moving into the post-COVID world, it seems like a lot of reasonable accommodations are being rolled back, like you mentioned. Do you expect to see lawsuits under the ADA along those lines? And if those lawsuits make it all the way to the Supreme Court, there are some analysts that say that SCOTUS might weaken the ADA. So, like, what are your thoughts on that? And are you kind of feeling like a Cassandra here? Are you feeling optimistic? Like, what's the temperature?
Oh, you speak my language. Alice Wong and I always talk about being a disabled oracle. You know, we talked about seeing the pandemic coming March 2017, the minute we saw the Trump administration roll back infection control standards in nursing homes. We were like, oh, this is not good. Something is going to happen. It's going to be exponentially craptastic.
Oh, no.
You know, and I think there's a couple of issues around the ADA. The first piece is we also need to acknowledge that even Democrats have actually moved to weaken the ADA. HR 620, which was actually passed by the House of Representatives back in 2018, was sponsored by, you know, one of my childhood heroes, even Representative Jackie Speier. And it would have rolled back the Title III provisions, the access to public accommodations for people with disabilities. So we've seen both legislative attacks as well as attacks in the court system. You know, most recently, there were two major cases this year, CVS versus Doe, where the plaintiffs had pharmacy insurance coverage managed by CVS. And they said that they were having problems accessing their HIV meds and related advice from pharmacists because of CVS's new rules for these medications. And CVS denied them the accommodations that they needed to be able to access their HIV meds. And so they ended up suing. And it's weird to say this, but thankfully, you know, thankfully CVS settled because we were really terrified of it going to the Supreme Court, you know, and even just a few weeks ago, we saw Payen versus LA County Community College District, where blind students were suing Community College District for denial of accommodations, whether it be screen readers, note takers, or other forms of assistive technology that they needed to be able to access. And the courts are in such a bad place right now where literally anytime a case is brought collectively as a community, we all hold our breaths and it's just like, please don't let it go further. Like, please let them settle. Please, you know, let's actively like fight to get this thing tabled, because we won't be able to hold on to the ADA the way that the court is currently structured.
Mm. Well, that's upsetting. Very.
You know, and I think we are going to see more cases with COVID, because I think that there is going to be a desire, you know, along with that desire to move on and move ahead, there's going to be a desire to not accommodate people, to continue to make the complaint that, oh, it's too expensive to accommodate people. Well, you can't really say that mm-hmm. anymore. You know, but I think within the disability, one of our needs for focus moving forward is really the courts. You know, we've seen tremendous gains in Congress. We've seen more people with disabilities elected to Congress. We've seen more disabled people self-identify once they got to Congress. You know, Representatives Porter and Presley and Tina Snow and others, Senator Tina Snow and others have really self-identified once they've gotten in office. But they're not enough to hold the line for some of these pieces of legislation that could do a lot of harm to the community.
Rebecca, what's the biggest misconception people have about people with disabilities?
I think it's that we're fakers, takers, and moneymakers. Like, that's the line that Rebecca Vallis and I tend to use. Like, there's this conception that, or there's this idea out there that if you're disabled, you get all these benefits that, like, you just like announce, hi, I'm disabled. And people start throwing money at you. People start throwing rights at you. And they forget the fact that, like, we had to legally fight for everything that we have. Nobody wants to be on public benefits. You know, it's, you can't, like, we live in a state right now where you can't have more than $2,000 in a checking account or you lose your health care if you're on SSI. You can't get married and receive public benefits or you lose your health care. Your parents can't let you live on their couch or it counts against your in-kind benefit levels and you lose your health care. I mean, I had an intern years ago that got accepted for a free ride to Harvard Law School and he lived in Illinois and he had to turn down the free ride because we don't have Medicaid portability in this country. Oh. And so in the state of Illinois, he got 12 hours of home care. He got somebody to help him cut up his food. He got somebody to help bathe him and get him dressed every day. In Massachusetts, he would have gotten 7. Hmm. His life is forever altered. He went to a great law school. He's got a great career, but a full ride to Harvard Law, and he had to turn it down because we don't have true equality as people with disabilities. But yet I think that there is this assumption by a lot of people in society that we get whatever we want, that this isn't something, that this is not an earned civil right, that what we're getting is extra or special treatment when it's so far from the truth.
For listeners with children, are there shows other than Sesame Street that teach a disability inclusive world?
We're actually seeing it more in different forms of media. Like, I've actually been really impressed in comic book spaces and graphic novel spaces. This is me nerding out, to see, you know, an increased presence of kids with disabilities. The children's author, Andrea Beatty, who does like Rosie Revere, Engineer, many of those characters are coded as students with disabilities. The mayor in that town is gay and disabled, which I think is awesome. You know, I think we're continuing to see a greater presence, but there isn't enough done. One of my grantees that I'm a huge fan of is called the Inevitable Foundation. And they're actually working to promote screenwriters with disabilities because it's not just about having a disabled actor in a situation. If the storyline is crap, we're not communicating the right message. And so really working to get people behind the scenes, because let's be real, that's also where the power is, shaking up what some of these storylines are. And I think we've seen, there was a moment 3 weeks ago where 3 nights in a row, I saw a positive portrayal of a little person on television. And that has never happened. And like, there were no elves involved. You know, I think disabled people will have full equality when we get to have our really crappy Hallmark holiday movie. Like when, you know, everybody sits there and is like, oh, there's a Latino Hallmark movie this year. Oh, there's an African-American Hallmark movie this year. Oh, there's an LGBT cheesy Christmas movie. When we get ours, then I think we'll have achieved something.
I would 100% watch that. That sounds like, sounds great. You should run Hollywood.
I'm already working on writing it.
Okay, so I don't want to take too much more of your time, Rebecca, but because it's Women's History Month, who is a woman disability rights activist you know from history who you think our listeners should know about, and what makes her so cool?
To me, one of the most important disabled women in history is Fannie Lou Hamer. Often her disability is written out, but Fannie Lou had polio, and it led to her being involuntarily sterilized without her knowledge and against her will. And so when she would protest, she would specifically fall in such a way to fold in the right side of her body, which was the side that was impacted. You know, women with disabilities still really struggle with our access to our reproductive rights. When I had my daughter, shortly after I left the White House in 2013, the anesthesiologist asked my OBGYN if she was going to sterilize me. I was laying on the back. I was laying on the operating table at Sibley Hospital. And he said, so while you're down there, you're just going to take care of things. People like her don't need to have more kids.
What?
No.
In the name of fuck.
That was pretty much my moment of what the fuck. Like, I was just like, I can't believe this is happening. And my husband is behind me, like, being like, calm down. We're going to, like, this is okay. And my OB, who I love to death, like, looked at, gave him the death stare and was like, you can leave now. I want to see, like, send in your attending and I'm going to speak with him after this. Your behavior is completely inappropriate. But I mean, the case Buck v. Bell, which allows the involuntary sterilization of disabled people, is still law. Mm-hmm. Kavanaugh used it in his confirmation hearing. Like, he talked about upholding the Doe versus DC case, which forced two disabled women in DC that were institutionalized to have abortions without their knowledge and their will. And, you know, to me, the fact that Fannie Lou Hamer went through that all the way back in the 40s and 50s, you know, and the fact that she was, when she decided to have kids, she went back and told her doctor, I keep trying to get pregnant and I can't get pregnant. And they're like, oh, you can't get pregnant because we sterilized you. Because people like you, a Black woman with a disability, don't need to have kids. The fact that that is still happening today and that that court case is still out there still shows how far we really need to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Buck v. Bell, anything written about it is the most depressing thing that you will read all day. It is.
We will have something exciting to share on it later this year. We're working on something really sneaky.
Ooh, sneaky. Well, you're going to have to come back on the show, Rebecca, when you can talk about the sneaky cool thing you're working on when it comes to Buck v. Bell, because we would love to talk to you about it.
Definitely. Count me in.
All right. Rebecca Coakley, thank you so much for joining us. We're going to take a break. When we come back, personal political.
Women's History Month should acknowledge the complicated, the messy, the countercultural, the revolutionary, the boat rockers, the overlooked, but it often doesn't. And so, in that spirit, we bring you the fourth episode of a month-long set of minis on women you should know we're calling Madam Hysteria. This week's Madam Hysteria is American fashion designer Anne Lowe, one of the 20th century's leading fashion pioneers who to this day is left out of conversations despite being one of the most sought-after creators of her time. Born in 1898, Anne got her first big break after designing four ball gowns for the First Lady of Alabama. On the heels of this success, she moved to New York City where she eventually opened Anne Lowe's Gowns in Harlem. She became the go-to dress designer for the highest of high society. Think Rockefellers. She was called society's best kept secret. In this time, Anne was commissioned for a major, major gig to design and create Jackie Kennedy's wedding dress, plus all the gowns for the bridal party. But Anne was robbed of this career defining moment when Jackie Kennedy herself snubbed the designer by failing to name her and instead lamenting that she wished she had gone to France for her dress. But Anne continued on, and in 1968, she became the first Black woman to open a store on Madison Avenue, no longer society's best-kept secret, as they said. But as a Black woman in a predominantly white space, Anne was taken advantage of by her wealthy clients and fell into debt. Debt that was eventually paid off anonymously, some say by Jackie O herself. Anne is now finally getting her due and is remembered as a pioneering African-American designer. Her pieces are preserved in renowned museum collections, including the Smithsonian National Museum of African American History and Culture and the Metropolitan Museum of Art. And now you know. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be back with Personal Political.
Five years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
This is Brian Tyler Cohen, host of the No Lie podcast, which is part of Crooked Media. You've likely seen my videos online or watched me torture Tommy Vitor as part of our series on YouTube, but this week I've got a really exciting episode. I'm interviewing the 44th president of the United States, Barack Obama. So if you want to tune in and hear what he's got to say, including a definitive answer as to whether or not aliens are real, make sure to listen by searching for No Lie with Brian Tyler Cohen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
And welcome back. Alyssa, I have a question for you, and I can kind of predict the answer, I think.
Okay, we'll see.
How many hours of your life have you devoted to thinking about members of the Kardashian family in your life?
Okay, so if we're being honest, when I was younger, a lot more than I do now.
So like a work week's worth of hours, maybe 40 hours?
In my whole life?
Yes.
I'd say that's fair.
Yeah. I've never watched Keeping Up with the Kardashians, not a single episode. And I'm not trying to be like, oh, I'm not like the other girls, because I am exactly like the other girls in many ways. But that is one way in which
The original Kardashians, the original seasons, I loved them. I thought they were the funnest people ever.
Yeah. I mean, they're compelling television, I guess. I've heard from other people who watch it. But I cannot avoid having them seep into my brain. And that is, I think, the genius of that family is they somehow figure out. It's like how Facebook can track you even if you don't have a Facebook account. They make up like a shadow Facebook account for people who don't have Facebook accounts. That's the Kardashians getting into my brain, getting into everybody's brain. And there have been some Kardashian headlines lately that I think, you know, it was the Kim Kardashian of times, it was the Kim Kardashian of times sort of a situation. So we're going to talk a little bit about a few headlines that have had to do with the Kardashians, but that have gone into kind of some deeper issues today. And joining us for that conversation, two of our favorites, two of your favorites. First, you can catch her on How I Met Your Father. All 10 episodes are available now on Hulu. Plus, How I Met Your Father was just picked up for season 2. Tien Tran, welcome.
Hello. So happy to be here.
Can I just say you steal the show?
Look, 100%. I mean,
you're totally biased, and I will absolutely take it and put it in my pocket. You guys are very good friends, and I will take it.
No, every time you came on screen, it was like, oh, this scene is going to make me laugh. Like there are some, you know, because like, you know, the mains have sort of like a lot of the emotional moments where they're not necessarily all supposed to be funny, but every time you come on screen, even in scenes that are like, that have emotional depth, I'm like, there's going to be something funny is going to happen in this.
Well, thank you. That means a lot to me.
And excited about season 2 because I will be watching. I don't know who the father is. I'm flummoxed.
I don't know either. I think they're going to tell us one thing as a cast and then just like, be switching it on us the entire time. So I'm not even going to try to guess.
Oh, yeah. I think that's probably best. Just like let the writing take you where it's going to take you. And up next, she's a writer, comedian, and her podcast, That's Messed Up, an SVU podcast, is going on tour, and you can catch her in LA this Saturday, the 26th, at Dynasty Typewriter. Tickets are available at dynastytypewriter.com. It's Kara Klenk. Kara, welcome.
Thank you so much. That's also a live stream if anyone doesn't live in LA.
Woo!
You can watch it from far away. I just Ooh. Needed to extend my plug.
And your co-host, Liza, is also hilarious.
Yes, Liza. She does Liza. Go by, but she is of Russian descent, and so it is Liza.
Yes. Oh, are you giving her shit, like extra shit lately? Because
no, because she's actually like escaped from the Ukraine and is like very, very upset by everything that's happening.
Oh, so good. You're holding her back. Do not go over there.
Yes,
she's gonna go personally. Take up fisticuffs against Vladimir Putin.
Yes. Yeah. She's definitely very, we raised a bunch of money on our podcast. We did like personalized thank you videos for people who donated and stuff. And like, we've been trying to
give
money. Yeah.
That's great. I have a question for you, and I bet that Liza would have an answer for this. Like, cause she's probably envisioned it. If Liza were to punch Vladimir Putin in the face, what would happen? Would his face explode? Like visually, what would that look like?
I mean, what I'd like to see is just for him to start crying, right? I would just like to see him start bawling like a little baby, you know? And then maybe stumble backwards into like an endless chasm or something like that. Where we can kind of watch him fall for a while.
Mm-hmm. That would
I think
be
that's,
cool.
That's me. I mean, Liza probably would have like a very colorful description of what she would want. And okay. You know what? I'll ask her on my next podcast. If you guys all listen, I'll ask her and we'll address this on our podcast.
Inquiring minds. We really want to know. So let's get into what we're going to talk about today. And that is the variety of headlines about Kim Kardashian and Kanye West that bring up deeper issues. So, Tien, I'm going to start with you.
Good. I love, I'm a expert.
A Kardashian expert. So I want to start with a story where we can kind of start a little bit lighter, and then I'm going to get into like the heavier one. So are you familiar with what Kim Kardashian recently said about Americans' work ethic?
I did. I saw the quote. I saw it memed all over the place. That was the extent to which I was exposed to it. I didn't have any. All I want is Kardashian out of context. So that's how I live my internet life, is a Kardashian quote out of context.
I don't feel like this one really needs context. Like, there is no context that would make a billionaire saying nobody wants to get their asses up and work.
Yeah.
Get your ass up and work. Like, what was your reaction? Did you expect her to say something like that? Do you think she said the quiet part loud? Like, what
of
did
course.
You think?
Of course. I feel like every billionaire is like bootstraps mentality. They're not going to be like, I was handed this money and I made more money off of all the money that I was handed. So I'm like, it fits in with their entire sort of brand of just being like, yeah, that they worked very, very extra hard for the billions of dollars that they had. So I'm not surprised by this whatsoever. I didn't think she was going to have some sort of nuanced critique of capitalism. If she did, I'd be like, whoa, she's incredible.
She is a lawyer. She is a lawyer. I mean,
yeah.
Is she?
She passed the baby bar, which allows her to take the regular bar. I think.
I don't think she's a practicing lawyer.
She's licensed. I think that she just is now entitled to take the bar in California.
I just saw an interview where she was talking about how Pete has her name branded on him.
I saw that.
She discussed how he has a tattoo that said, "My girl is a lawyer." So she's enough of a lawyer that her boyfriend had it put on his skin forever, I guess.
I guess most lawyers do that, right? They do that to their partners. I think that's what they all do.
Yeah. I know a woman who's a defense attorney who has a giant tattoo that says not guilty on her arm. And yes, it is kind of badass.
I didn't expect Kim to like highlight all the like systemic barriers for people to like,
of course. Well, what if Kim Kardashian like joined DSA? Like, wouldn't that be incredible? Like, cause I was thinking when I read this, I was just like, oh God, I'm tired of keeping up with you. I feel like you tied me to the back of your car and you're dragging me along. I don't want to keep up. Cut me loose. I felt like, you know, and I tweeted something to this effect, but I think that Kim Kardashian has done a really good job at like branding herself on the very edge of what the zeitgeist considers a villain. So like when she first came into the, you know, into the public eye, she was a woman having sex on film, you know, which is like just at the very end. That was like kind of toward the end of the like obsession in the 90s and early aughts with pop stars' virginity. And, you know, Jessica Simpson and, you know, who's, are you virgin? When are you going to lose your virginity? Virginity, virginity, virginity. And that was like right at the end of that. So she sort of like was at the, she was like, yes, but no. And then she kind of became like an influencer, but the original influencer. So she was doing the influencer thing before other people were doing it. So she was kind of like, against social media, but with social media. And now she's sort of like the billionaire who thinks that work is what leads to being a billionaire, which is like on the edge of like girl boss and burn it all down capitalism type stuff. So I think like that's sort of a savvy move. Kara, what do you make of her comments though? Like, are you mad about them? Have they stayed in your head?
Well, when I first heard it, I was like, this bitch. But then I talked about it with Lisa a little bit, actually, on our podcast. And she was like, well, she's not really talking to you. She's not really talking to everybody. Like, she's really kind of talking, she felt like, to influencers. And that was, like, sort of a different way of looking at it. She's talking to people who are like her. Mm-hmm. She's like, if you're, like, an influencer and you think you can just sit there, like, taking pictures and, like, make it, like, you know, if you in a bikini, like, no, you need to diversify. You need to get brand deals, blah, blah, blah. I think that almost makes it make more sense to me, but I think we're also being generous with that idea that's what Kim was talking about, you know, like, because you are who you surround yourself. I mean, like, who do you know? Like, I don't think Kim knows that many people who get up and go to 9-to-5 jobs. You know what I mean? Like, right. So her if staff, she's looking around.
I was going to say her nannies. Like
her nannies. Yeah, but like, you know what I mean? Like the people that she surrounds herself with, I'm sure like that she sees in it and she's like, you know what? That person could seriously be getting into the swimwear space and they're just not getting off their ass to do it. You know, like. I think maybe it was a little bit of that, but also, yeah, like she has no idea what like an average person goes through. And I just never want to hear anything about work from someone who like started on third and thinks they hit a triple or whatever that phrase is, you know, like yeah. You just, you know, you grow up in Beverly Hills, like, or, you know, some rich part of LA. And I just, I didn't like it because I almost feel like, what are you talking about? Like, we're in the middle of gig economy. Like, we're like, people are starting their own businesses, like left and right. Like, people are working, you know? Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I would like her to elaborate on who the nobody is. Like, who's nobody wants to work these days? Who are you talking about, girl?
Yeah. Alyssa, I wonder like how, if like there the firestorm that happened afterwards, the shitstorm, if you will, had to do with the fact that we're at the end of a pandemic that made a lot of people work so hard that they were like stretched to the brink.
Well, it's not just that. People worked hard. People lost their jobs. I mean, so many people were unemployed. They took jobs that were not what they wanted just to be able to have fucking healthcare during a pandemic. And I think that what was so terrible about what she said was that it's so clear, like none of us would say what she said. Because we know, one, that it's wrong, and then also what the backlash would be. And it's so clear that she just, like, didn't think, like, and then Courtney chimes in and is like, yes.
That's so what killed right. me.
It was
dead
so
eye
bad.
Courtney.
Yeah, can someone explain that to me?
Courtney?
Yeah.
Oh, no. So Kim's like, I just, like, people don't work hard. People don't want to work hard. And then Courtney was like, yes. It was like,
she goes, she said something like, so true. And I'm like, dead-eyed Courtney, like, yes. Courtney, who has, like, not an inch of a soul behind her eyes. Like, I truly think Courtney has been the most along for the ride of any of them because she seems to be dead.
She probably used the like least amount of muscles possible to even say that out loud.
It's true.
All it takes, you just have to let your jaw slacken a little to say,
yeah. No, that's exactly what I did when I said it. Yes. So tired.
She's the originator of the Uncut Gems tone of voice.
Uncut Gems. We never really got into Uncut Gems on here. And do I regret it? No, I think I'm a Julia Fox apologist. I think she's electric, and I consider her my muse. Anyway, Alyssa, like, I don't know. We've talked a lot about this on the pod, especially when we talk about, like, depressing stats that come out about how stretched thin caretakers are, and most caretakers are women. Like, do you think that people will turn on the Kardashians because of this sort of a mindset? Do you think this is like, they're just,
I mean, this wasn't, here's the thing. It's not shocking she thinks it. It's only shocking she said it out loud. Like, like, we weren't appalled because we were like, oh my God, I thought that Kim was a member of DSA. Like, it was, it was more like, girl, come on. Like, didn't Chris teach you better when she holds that giant Goyard suitcase that says rich as fuck? Like, it's, like, come on.
What was the context of the interview? Like, what was it, just a regular interview or
no,
what?
No, it was like a, like a promo for something. Wasn't it like a promo for the new season?
Just, they were just like in a void, weren't they? Weren't they in like a weird studio void?
Yeah, they were like in a box posing. They were posing all in black.
Nothing better than like pulling yourself out of the real world, putting yourself in a void and saying that.
Right.
That's the thing. It's like, okay, if a talk show host caught you off guard and that's what you blurted out, like, I still hate you, but like, maybe
they could have edited out what she said.
Yeah, they could have edited it. She, like, you know, she seemed like she had like time to think about it. You know, it's like,
no, she thought she was like truth telling or some shit, and that people were gonna think she was brave.
Right.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if it was like a promotion for like a Kim Kardashian masterclass or something like that. You know what I mean?
Well, I think it's a promo. It was a promo for the new Hulu show, I think.
Right. But I'm saying like after all of this, after all of this huge like blowback, maybe she's like, and now introducing Kardashian University. I mean, she's very Trumpian in a lot of ways. And I could see her being like, people don't want to work. I'm going to teach you how to work, bitch. Like, and then she starts her own little, I don't know. I just think everything's a move with her.
I mean, the other thing too is that she is not alone in that thinking. Like, so many people think that. You know, I've come across some of my favorite things to like internet scroll down to is like the weird like aggro mask motivation Instagrams that are like, if you're not a lion, you're not doing like,
oh my God.
Like, you're a sheep.
You're a sheep. Like, if you're not out there like being top and crushing your enemies, then you're never going to get like whatever you want. Like, that's some of, like, she's not alone in thinking that. I think like a lot of the world and America believes that people don't work hard enough, and that is why they're in the situation that they're in, not like, you know, lack of resources and like social services.
Yeah.
So, you know, we are pissed, but like, she's probably got people that are like, oh my gosh, yes, Kim, way to say it.
I mean, it's also sort of a backdoor brag, right? Like, it's like nobody wants to work and that is why they don't succeed. Ergo, the reason I have succeeded is because I worked harder than all of you. Like, nobody else is willing to go as far as I did. Ergo, I'm better than everybody else. Which is like, and Tian, you're totally right about that mindset being pervasive. Like, I remember when I was working in financial services, like, there's a salesy aspect to some of it, guys. Surprise, surprise. But there's a salesy aspect to it. And there's this like very insidious, like, if you're not like at the top of the sales chart, you're not, you know, it's because you're not working hard enough. It's like a sort of Lula Rich kind of thing. Like, you make your own success. Like, and I think that it's the pervasiveness of that thinking is like something that is deeply sick about America, because we all, like, those of us who are successful and don't see that we're successful in part because of an oppressive
system. Or those of us who are not successful and see the system weighing down on us, but want to believe that we can work our way out of it. Like, it's all very, like, deeply sick to me.
Exactly right. Mm.
Yeah.
I mean, how do we get rid of that sickness? Like, what is the, can we inoculate ourselves? Can we just pull our heads out of our asses collectively? Is that possible?
I wish.
I don't know. Insert cricket sounds.
Oh, boy.
I don't know. I don't know.
Boy. So I think we all can agree that this this was a promo. This was something that was planned. This was released with their approval. Maybe they didn't quite understand the extent to which her girl bossing would not be applauded. But, you know, publicity is publicity, you know, so we're talking about them. There, here's something that is a little bit more serious, a lot more serious, that I don't think that the Kardashians are in charge of the narrative on, and that is in the absolute horror show that is the way that Kanye West is handling their breakup. Kara, you're making like a face of recognition. Can you kind of like walk through what you know about what you've seen and what you think about it?
I mean, essentially, you know, Kanye is constantly having a meltdown publicly. Like, it's just one prolonged meltdown. So, but I think that there's been a spike since his breakup with Kim, and he's publicly attacking her on social media. He's attacking her boyfriend, Pete Davidson. He's attacking random people like Trevor Noah. If he says something about this, he posted about him, and he posted a racial slur about him. And he also is, like, he's mad at Kim because she let North have a TikTok. And then he'll say stuff like, I haven't seen my kids in days. And Kim will write back on underneath the comment, the Instagram post and go, you saw them this morning to pick them up from school. Stop this. And he's just really like, he's trying to do this narrative that his family's being ripped away from him. And that Kim is, you know, evil, and that she has this boyfriend who he doesn't want around his children. And he's trying to paint him in a certain way too. But it's very threatening. And it's like, I feel like we're watching, you know, at the very, like, emotional abuse happening live on Instagram. And it's happening between two of the most famous people in the world. And it's really unsettling because, I mean, I have a podcast that's about a television show that addresses, you know, rape and murder and violence against women and children. But, and like, we talked about this where we're like, this is when people say, like, why don't women leave? Like, why don't you just walk away? Why don't you do? It's like, this is the most power, one of the most powerful women in the world. And look at what she's going through, you know? So it's like, it's really, really unsettling to watch what's being unfolding between them.
Mm-hmm. Tien, do you think social media sites have a responsibility to kind of try to nip this in the bud?
I mean, I think it's very upsetting that the most they can do is like, take away his Instagram for 24 hours only after he like broke their community guidelines of using a racial slur and not the very obvious threats of violence and emotional abuse that's taking place over the past couple months. Like, I've been following a little bit, and Kara, you hit it like right on the head. It's just, it's absolutely terrifying to see two of the most powerful people, most famous people, Kim experiencing this level of like partner emotional abuse, and it's in plain sight, and no one can do, like, nothing is actively being done to hold him accountable, really. And like, she has the resources, she has the evidence, and yet nothing. And these social media, I think they have a responsibility to do a lot more, but they don't give a shit. So I it's never going to be like a meta justice. The metaverse is never going to have its own form of meta justice. So I wish they did, but they just won't.
I might actually partake in the metaverse if there was a meta courtroom.
But could you imagine? That's a TV show I'd watch.
Meta court and meta court. Yeah, we could just. Oh, that would be. Okay.
You guys, Judge Judy.
It's just the dancing Shrek meme as the judge. So it's just like.
I was going to say, make this Judge Judy's second act.
No, I want the dancing Shrek to come out and announce the verdict.
Yeah, just like.
Yeah, yeah. It's Tien is dancing like.
Oh,
dancing
yeah,
Shrek
I forgot.
Meme.
This is an audio medium.
Alyssa, like, you know, we've this is another issue that we've kind of talked about, especially when it comes to news. Like, what? I mean, could she go to the police? Like, would the police do anything?
I mean, I think she could. I mean, like, here's the thing. Of all people who I think would get a response, it would be Kim, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like out there. It's her abuse and stalking is reported on not just like the nightly entertainment news, but it's made like the news. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like of all people, if she wanted him to be held accountable, she would have a better chance. Also, she's a lawyer. She would have a better chance than the average woman, right? But I'm sure for many reasons, she doesn't want to do that. Otherwise, I feel like she probably would have by now.
Yeah, you know, I was just pulling this up, so I don't have this. I'm not going to, like, pretend that I just, like, have this at the recall because my brain is broken. But there was a 2015 Supreme Court case, actually, that dealt with a violent ex making very, very scary statements online. The Supreme Court ultimately didn't make it easier for people to go after legally people who were threatening them online. So there was a case of a man named Anthony Ilanis who was convicted of threatening his wife. This is from Politico. He was threatening his wife, a kindergarten class, police officers, and an FBI agent with really scary Facebook posts. And his defense was that he was just kidding. They were tongue-in-cheek, like rap music. He was writing rap music. And essentially, his conviction got thrown out because the ruling said that a reasonable person's conclusion about the statements being threatening isn't enough to sustain a criminal conviction. So basically, like, crazy rants online, the Supreme Court has held, don't necessarily constitute threats, which I'm sure Kim knows because she's a lawyer. But yeah, it's really fucked up and it's not very safe out there. And we have people making laws around digital safety that like need their emails printed out. You know, like yes. we live in a gerontocracy where yeah. most of the people in charge of this country are much older than the population at large. So it's really upsetting. And how do you think this ends, Kara? Like, how does this end?
I mean, the scary thing to me is that Kanye is like so performative. Like, I don't know, like he's so into like his art and everything that I worry he would do something crazy just to be like, we're the king and the queen of like the artistic media world, or do you know, like of pop culture almost. Like, I'm worried he would do something crazy. He seems to love his kids. I hope he wouldn't do anything to one of the kids, but I don't think you can put anything past somebody who I think has documented mental health issues. If not, then insert me saying allegedly here, but I think it's like documented, but because Kim has talked about it that he needs help. And so I really don't know. Like with them, it's like, I don't know, maybe she breaks up with Pete and this all just goes away. Maybe it's like something about him that's specifically setting off Kanye. I doubt it, but like, I don't know. I really can't say, but I really hope that I hope that like a lawyer or somebody, a business manager, someone that he can listen to can like explain to him how he's jeopardizing like his, probably his custody,
yeah,
his career, you know, like, and maybe he figures out a way to back off and he gets some help, but I don't know.
Tian, how do you think, like, what would you like to see happen and like, what do you think is going to happen?
Oh, I mean, I would like to see more of the coverage around it be more nuanced and thoughtful about the abuse, because I think that will help to just garner public support and sympathy for domestic violence and emotional abuse, because I feel like the media is still doing such a terrible job of treating it like it's a feud, like that both partners are that both of them are in equal power dynamics, which is simply not true, and are wielding their power in equally violent ways, also not true. It's very one way. And so I hope that like for because they use the media, that the media starts to become wiser to that. I'm fearful that he will continue to use his art for, you know, he had that music video that came out where he's kidnapping and burying a Pete Davidson claymation lookalike. Like, I think people will continue to look at the things he puts out and kind of talk to it as though it's just art, when I think people need to look deeper into the intention behind it and like the real threats and scariness of it. I hope they figure it out. It just feels like it's no one is around him that would, it doesn't feel like anyone is around him that he would listen to. Like, I think that's the scariest thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I know you said hopeful, but that was just, none of that was hopeful.
No. I think your point about the unequal way that the violence is being wielded is really, really apt. And I think that you're absolutely right about, it's not like, yeah, it's not a feud. It's not a feud if I'm being chased, if I'm being chased by a bear. I'm not in a feud with the bear. The bear is trying to eat me and I'm trying to get away. And like, to write about a clearly abusive dynamic as like, oh, this lover
spat.
Yeah. It's like, nah, that's wrong word. Alyssa, any closing thoughts on, you know, what is happening between them and what you hope happens?
Yes, Erin, I actually do have some deep thoughts on this one. I would like Kim to, well, one, we know that she has security. Her house probably has the best security. She travels with security. So of all people being harassed online and in real life, she's probably in a better position to remain safe than other people are. That said, I would like her, when Kim puts her mind to something, it does tend to happen. And so I would like Kim to raise awareness around domestic violence, domestic abuse. I think that she could help so many people if she helped explain why it happens, why it's bad, and maybe help provide resources for people who are victims. So that's my dream. That's my wish out of this very weird, bad situation.
Yeah, I think that's the best possible way we can move forward, or Kim could move forward. And I like, nobody deserves any of what is happening.
No.
It doesn't matter like how much you don't like them or how much you don't want to watch their show or how much you think that sometimes what she says is clueless. It's like nobody deserves to be stalked and abused and harassed by a former partner. So before we take a break, a quick note, if you're experiencing domestic violence, the National Domestic Violence Hotline is open 24/7 and speaks English, Spanish, and over 200 other languages through an interpretation service. So if you need help, you need to talk to somebody, call today, 800-799-7233. That number is 800-799-7233.
And I think that they also actually have an online option, because we've talked about this. They have an online option that I think also you can view privately so that no one can check your browser history. So if like the computer or doing it on your phone is easier, I just wanted to point that out.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Thank you for that, Kara. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're all still going to be here and we are going to wrap the show with an I Feel Petty.
I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
This is Brian Tyler Cohen, host of the No Lie podcast, which is part of Crooked Media. You've likely seen my videos online or watched me torture Tommy Vitor as part of our series on YouTube. But this week, I've got a really exciting episode. I'm interviewing the 44th president of the United States, Barack Obama. So if you want to tune in and hear what he's got to say, including a definitive answer as to whether or not aliens are real, make sure to listen by searching for No Lie with Brian Tyler Cohen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
And welcome back to almost the end of the show, but not quite the end of the show. We still have to share with all of you, our listeners, what we're feeling petty about this week. But first, a little bit of housekeeping. Stuck with Damon Young is the newest podcast from Crooked and Gimlet. On his show, award-winning author Damon Young explores the uncomfortable, hideous, and hilarious absurdity of being Black in America. He's joined by some of the brightest minds and boldest voices of the Black community, including Nicole Hannah-Jones, Sam Irby, love her, one of my favorite writers, Jason Reynolds, and more. You're going to love this show. Listen and follow Stuck with Damon Young only on Spotify. Okay, house has been kept. Kara, what are you feeling petty about this week?
I am feeling extremely petty about a piece of vestigial technology that I think needs to be banned from the planet. It has been the bane of my existence this entire past week, this week that we're in, and last week. The fax machine. Can we be done with faxes? Can we get rid of fax machines? Like, we all have computers now. The internet is working. You can do password protected documents. Like, people are like, it's not as secure. Oh, really? It's secure sitting in a tray around 25 nurses and random receptionists. Like, they're sitting there for an hour. I've been trying to get one piece of paper across Los Angeles for 8 days. Oh my God. And their fax machine, simply the number that they are giving me, simply does not work. And I just don't understand why fax machines cannot just be buried along with rotary telephones or whatever. Although those are kind of fun. Those are kind of fun and vintagey. But no, I want fax machines gone. And if you are a part of the fax lobby, please do not DM me.
Kara, you could like walk the piece of paper across. You could just tie up a little like bindle and put it on a
stick. I was getting close. But we're talking Verdugo Hill. We're talking like almost San Marino area of Glendale all the way to Santa Monica. This would take me hours.
Oh,
and I'm just trying to get one piece of paper because I just want to change from an old doctor to a new doctor. And it's like, it's been making me nuts. So I feel very petty about it.
Ugh.
I completely agree with you. I'm in it's W-2 trackdown season and I've been, and I called one payroll place and they were like, you can fax. And I was like, well, I guess I'll just get audited. I'm not gonna fax this paper. I'm not gonna do it.
And places always will be like, you can fax it. And I'm like, is there an email? And then they will have an email half the time. And it's like, why didn't you open with that? I don't want to do the fax.
Yeah.
No one has one.
Nobody wants to print. That's the thing. The printer. So what they're trying to do is get you to use the fax machine and print it out for them, basically.
It's a good point.
If you have send them as an email, then they have to print it out. And nobody likes printers either, because fuck a printer.
We all have cameras in our pockets. We need to be moving on from fax machines.
Yeah. I think, paper in general, we don't need it.
And now that leads seamlessly into Aaron's I Feel Petty. Paper. What are we doing?
Get rid of it. Alyssa, what are you feeling petty about this week?
You guys, I'm feeling petty about the fact that Hollywood is trying to normalize cannibalism. Like, why do we have to do that? Of all the things that we have to normalize, I don't think this is one of them. And at first, like the Yellow Jacket show, you guys know, I'm easily nightmared. Okay, night terrors come easy. When I was little, I slept on my parents' floor for a month after E.T. Okay, so like, admittedly, though, you know what, Kara? What doesn't give me nightmares? SVU. I can watch the most gruesome episode and be totally fine. However, not the one about cannibalism. And so yesterday, I was sitting here minding my business and I get an alert from the Hollywood Reporter that Timothée Chalamet is doing a movie or show about cannibalism. And I feel that's really crossing a Rubicon. Like, I feel like Timothée Chalamet doesn't need to be involved in cannibalism or making it mainstream. So that's my feeling about it. And I feel sad because I'm not going to be mainstream anymore if I can't watch the shows that everyone's watching and talking about, because I'll need 10 edibles to be able to quiet my brain and go to sleep.
I would like to see him do a softer side of cannibalism, though. That's what I'm excited about.
A
very soft and like approachable, palatable cannibalism.
As I've said, in a cannibalism situation, I know that I would be the first to get roasted because I'm somewhat succulent. And so I think that makes me nervous, too. I don't want people sitting next to me on a plane and being like, jackpot, like in case we go down.
Do you remember when Alive came out, Alyssa?
Yes.
The movie Alive? I mean, that was like the talk of the world.
I avoided the trailers of that movie because I was so afraid.
I was like in eighth grade and people were like, did you see Alive? And I'm like, I'm too scared. Like, I can't watch
that. Yeah, no. No, I'm going to sit home and watch The Waltons instead. Thank you. Call me when you get to the bar.
We were texting about this yesterday, Alyssa and I were, and my response was like very whatever, like film grad student. My husband does have a graduate degree in film. But that's why when we're like, we're going to discuss a film. But I was like, my pushback on that is that like, I feel like cannibalism speaks to like the zeitgeist in a way that a lot of like trendy horror topics spoke to their respective zeitgeist. Like slasher movies in the 70s was like, like fear response to like the advances of feminism, and like zombie movies in the 50s, like a fearful depiction of what like mass assimilation looks like.
Wow.
Cannibalism is like, we've just lived through this period of time where we've proven over and over again that we do not give a fuck about each other in this country.
Whoa.
And like, we're so callous to each other that the horror movie version of that is us actually consuming each other. Using each other as food because we don't give a shit about each other anymore.
Yeah,
but that doesn't mean you have to like watch.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I co-sign that that's why it's happening. I feel like also that's not why Hollywood's doing it. I think they're like, yo, people like Yellow Jackets. Let's go.
Yeah.
And they took away the wrong things. They took away the wrong things from Yellow Jackets.
They're not like, oh, well, yeah, Hollywood is like, what will people like? Not what do I like? Actually, this whole town of LA is like people standing in line for things that other people like without deciding whether or not they like it themselves.
Aaron, that was the best film studies class I've ever been to.
I know. Yeah. That just blew my mind. If you could see me, my mouth, my jaw was on the floor.
Well, there's a really good book if you like to nerd out about like movies or whatever. I'm very, very fraidy cat about horror movies. I have to read a total synopsis.
Me too.
But I will watch them and I'll enjoy them. Like, I thought, I love Ari Aster's movies. I think Hereditary and Midsommar were both fantastic. But I had to fully be like, okay, this is the part where Toni Collette is on the ceiling. I had to know in advance that it was coming. But there's a great book that I read parts of in college, and then I read the whole thing later, called Men, Women, and Chainsaws, which is like a kind of feminist film critique of like horror movies and slasher flicks, and analyzed like The Final Girl and what it means. And all. It's really like cool. So if you like that stuff, it's like,
fun
book. It's a fun book to like read in pieces. Pun intended. So here's what I'm feeling petty about this week. I'm feeling petty about cabbage. Cabbage is a vegetable that is so easy to overcook. I think we should just be done with it if we're going to cook it. I think we can lightly saute it, little sesame oil. I think that some Asian cuisines are great with cabbage, but I think like European cabbage preparation, no. I made some like corned beef and cabbage for—
Oh yeah, St. Patrick's Day?
Yeah. And like the Trader Joe's pre-corned corned beef, because I have cured my own corned beef before, and a lot of work. It takes like 10 days. Don't recommend. But I use the like Trader Joe's whatever, and I was like, I'm going to throw in some cabbage into my Instant Pot, see what happens. The cabbage came out like wet tissue paper. It was just like wet Kleenex. Like it was, I had to like scrape it off of the other food, and just European preparation of cabbage. We just need to be done with it. We can let other cultures handle cabbage, but like, I just think like Irish cabbage prep is terrible. No more. No more of it. I'll have a cabbage slaw. I'll enjoy some stir-fried cabbage that is prepared in a manner that preserves some of its integrity. But like the mushy way that I specifically fucked up Irish cabbage preparation, we need to be done with. It's not my fault. It's Europe's fault.
You want to keep it cruciferous. You need to keep it like a crunchy veggie.
Exactly.
Okay. You want to keep it as close to like you know, like the taste of a human bite. Exactly. You want it to keep it crunchy, work through it.
Sinewy. I want yeah. I want chewiness. I want it to like have a almost like a bloody, you know. Okay, that's what I'm feeling petty about. Tien, what are you feeling petty about this week?
I'm feeling petty about the fact, I don't know, I downloaded a meditation app and I'm feeling petty about the fact that my meditation app is fucking bullying me. I got a notification today that was like, hey, it's been 2 weeks since you last meditated. Do you need tips on how to stay on track? And I'm like, okay, bitch, I know I haven't found 3 minutes a day to sit with myself. I don't need to be reminded that I am missing that. It makes me so mad that this is built into this app, that it's telling me how bad I am at meditating. Like, that is only increasing my anxiety and making it harder for me to return to the 3 minute a day meditation. And I know it's just 3 minutes, but I haven't found the time to do it yet. I'm getting bullied by my app and I feel petty about it.
Oh my God. It reminds me of like when you get a text from somebody and you just, and they're like, so you just don't respond to me now? And it's like, well, now I don't. I saw your text before and I just forgot to respond. But this little snippiness will not be rewarded with attention.
Yeah, this passive-aggressive meditation app is really not winning me over.
I had a water app that was like that, where it was like a million reminders a day. Like, you're not drinking your water. Come on, you still have time to drink that water. And I was just like, stop it. Now I'm just gonna purposely get dehydrated just to spite you.
I know, that's where I'm at right now too. I'm like, I will keep all the stress and anxiety in my body because you're bullying me.
I will not sit with myself.
I will not sit with myself.
My feelings are rafts on a river in my brain, and I will hop on each one of them.
Yes.
Rather than watch them pass me by. I too used to have, I think, the app that you're talking about.
Yeah.
Indeed. Indeed. Okay. Well, that's all the time we have for this week's episode of Hysteria. Kara and Tien, you two are just lovely. Lovely, lovely. Thank you to Rebecca Coakley for stopping by to talk to us about the ADA. Alyssa, per usual, thank you for being my ride or die. How should people get in touch with us if they want to get in touch with us?
Should they email hysteria@crooked.com?
They should, but, you know, our warning every week is if you email us and it's like shitty and funny, we will be passing it around.
100%.
To be ridiculed. So just, you know, Keep that in mind before you write us a hate mail.
Can we start a fax line?
Oh, hell yeah. If you have anything to say about me specifically, fax it.
Fax it to 555 Kara Hate. And listeners, thanks to all of you. And if you like what you're hearing, rate us, review us, tell your friends, and there will be more Hysteria for you next week. I am from another planet, this nation.
Hysteria is a Crooked Media production. Caroline Reston is our producer. Our executive producer is me, Aaron Ryan. Alyssa Mastromonaco is our co-producer, and Brian Semmel is our associate producer. Kyle Seglin and Charlotte Landis are the sound engineers, and our editor is Sarah Gibolaska and the folks at Chapter 4. Thank you to our digital team, Nara Melkonian, Mia Kelman, Milo Kim, and Matt DeGroot.
If you guys like Pod Save America, please consider subscribing to our Friends of the Pod program. So Friends of the Pod get lots of stuff. You get more Pod Save America. That includes our new show, which is called Pod Save America Only Friends.
It's where Dan gets naked.
Where Dan gets full frontal nudity, but mostly it's a bi-weekly subscription exclusive podcast that is basically Pod Save America, but behind a paywall. So it's a little bit looser and more fun. And it's Lovett and Favreau and me and Pfeiffer and then other Crooked hosts. We go deeper on the news and cover more stories. You also get Open Tabs, which is a weekly behind-the-scenes newsletter from the show. Plus, you get ad-free episodes of your favorite Crooked podcasts and all kinds of other stuff. Dan will come to your house and clean it once every quarter.
Yeah, clothed.
Dan is very busy, clothed only. But along with just getting great content, Becoming a friend of the pod, joining our subscription community, is the number one thing you can do to help us grow, to help independent progressive media. So if you've ever thought about doing it, if you ever wanted more Pod Save America, consider going to crooked.com/friends and becoming a friend of the pod.